And welcome to the Oxygen Addicts Triathlon Podcast. We're brought to you every week by our sponsors, precisionhydration.com. Electrolytes in different strengths that match how you sweat. You can get 15% off your first order with the code OXYGENADDICT15. Well, welcome to the show, everybody. We've got a special edition of the show for you today. The special edition is entitled Fueling Strategies for Triathlon. And we've got special guest Andy Blow, the founder of Precision Hydration and also ex-pro triathlete, to come on to talk to us about their approach to helping athletes and triathletes understand what they call the three levers for fueling endurance performance. So I get hundreds of questions about this literally every week, especially in the run-up to races. How do I balance and know how many calories I need to take in, how much of that needs to be carbohydrate, how much fluid do I need to take in, and how much sodium and electrolytes do I need to take in? So we've gone straight to the source. Precision Hydration, as you know, they've been a long-time sponsor to the show. I think they're a fantastic company. They're a great bunch of people, most importantly, but they've also got a fantastic product. And most importantly for me, it's backed by solid science. They've really invested in sports science. They've got their own official sports scientist as part of their team. And also, they've got tons and tons of free information on their website in terms of blog posts and different calculators that can genuinely help you out for free. So they're not just about selling stuff. They're very, very clear in lots of places that, you know, although they do sell their own product, there are lots of products out there. No one's saying which one's right for you. Here's the information that you need to go away and work out that information for yourself. And I've been really impressed with that approach. They've looked at lots of other companies' products and they never take the approach of saying this is useless and wrong because of this. They just review the science and review the products that are out there. And I've got a lot of respect to them for them for doing that. So Andy's great. I've had him on a couple of times before. He's one of my favorite people in the endurance world. He's so knowledgeable. He's got a wealth of scientific knowledge, but he's also got a wealth of real world experience to back that up as well. And the confluence and crossover of those two things is pretty rare, I think, in the world. They started the company to solve a problem Andy was having rather than starting a company to make money, which again is rare. And when you've got a genuine reason for starting the company to solve a problem that faces a particular racer, group of racers, as it's turned out, every racer out there, it goes a long way into helping an awful lot of people. So yeah, really pleased to have them on. I make no apologies for it being a little bit Precision Hydration heavy. Like I've said often, they're sponsors of the show because I like them and like the product much more so than because they approached us and said, we want to sponsor the show. So they're a great bunch of people. Really happy with that. So yeah, tune in for that. We've got about 45 minutes of an interview with Andy later on. And I think if you listen to all of it, it will go a long way to answering your own individual questions and pointing you most importantly in the direction of really good resources and information that can help you find the right information for yourself and the right answers for yourself. And that's the most important thing for you going into races. Okay, so first up, before we go into the interview, racing has been back and has been happening in the UK. Really excited this weekend. We knew June the 20th was the, in my head was the first big kickoff weekend of the big races. We've had both the Outlaw Half Nottingham event and also the Lakesman Full and Lakesman Half Distance Triathlons. Both of them fantastic events put on by fantastic race organisers in the UK. Been lucky enough to race at both of them. Can't recommend both events highly enough. So I was down at Nottingham this weekend watching our athletes race and watching the pro race or the elite races unfold as well. Nottingham was a fantastic event. The weather didn't quite hold up the way we were hoping it to. It was pretty chilly and it was very windy, which I think ultimately cost our winner a chance for a real crack at the course record there. But it was a really good, really well-run event. It had been slightly changed in terms of the course to keep the whole run course enclosed within the boundaries of the Home Pier Point Water Sports Centre. But every runner I spoke to said that they'd really enjoyed it and the variety was great. So it sounds like they've got a change that's been forced on them by circumstance that, who knows, might end up sticking around. Very varied run in and around the actual white water section of the canoeing white water park there, which a lot of the runners said that they really, really enjoyed and broke up the sort of the just on concrete and path section that they would usually have on the run. So that was really good. And I really enjoyed spectating. It was a really well-run, safe event. And it's really great to be back and feel as though events are actually properly happening. And I took the approach of thinking, well, I won't really believe that this is going to happen until I see it. But it was really good. And everyone I spoke to, both in the elite race after the events and all the athletes from our team that I spoke to, really, really enjoyed it. So that was really good to see. In terms of results, we'll kick off on the men's side. There was a surprise winner here, actually, because of the nature of the rolling start. The event was won by Josh Lewis, who finished in 3:55. Fantastic race from him. He started a bit further back in the starting order, so he wasn't first across the line. It looked like it was a head-to-head race between Andrew Horsfall Turner, who ended up finishing second, and Tim Don, who ended up finishing third. I think Andy Horsfall Turner was a couple of minutes up off the bike, and Tim Don was running him down and ended up not very far behind him on the road. I think he was only a minute behind him, which is, you know, it's a couple of hundred meters, isn't it, in the real world. So Andrew crossed the line as Tim was coming into the finishing chute. So it was a really good close race, and Andrew did really, really well to hold on. And then a couple of minutes later, Josh Lewis crossed the line, and it was only the nature of the timing system that revealed to us that Josh was the overall winner. So a fantastic result for him. 3:55 against a course record that was 3:51. So very good racing in windy, cold conditions. Andy Horsfall Turner was a minute back in 3:56.47. Tim Don was there in 3:57.53. So great racing from all of them. And I managed to get a couple of clips. I got Andy and Tim for a quick interview at the finish line there. I didn't manage to get Josh, unfortunately, because he disappeared by the time I turned around. Understandable given the circumstances. So we'll get to those little interview clips in a minute. Over in the female race, just as impressive was the win here by Lydia Dant. She finished in 4:24. So, you know, 30 minutes behind the male winning time, and again, a world-class male winning time. So a fantastic result for her. A really astonishing time for a sort of domestic standard race, in inverted commas. I'm really impressed with that. And I've not heard of Lydia before. So well done to you, Lydia. Megan McDonald took second in 4:25, so very close behind. And then Rosie Weston took third in 4:32. So great racing there. Unfortunately, again, due to the nature of the sort of the rolling start and the rolling finish, I didn't manage to get any video, any audio clips with our female finishers at all. It was just too hard to find people after the finish line, with us needing to move around so much and obviously not being able to hang about in the usual positions. Got a couple of audio clips here from the male side. Unfortunately, the sound quality is really broken up in places, and I think there's some distortion caused by the other equipment around. So I'll still play these clips out, but apologies for the poor sound quality here. So Andy Horsfall Turner, congratulations, winning the Outlaw Half Nottingham. How do you feel? Second now.
Quite far behind us. He managed to pick me just to the line, so second place, and then Tim now in third. So, yeah.
Well, congratulations on second and being first across the line. It's so bloody hard to know what's going on, isn't it, with the staggered start?
Yeah, staggered start was an interesting one. I said to the guy who won, Josh, who I know, I said it'd be really, really good to do a mass start, because I think the dynamics would have come into play, and exactly, you know exactly where you are the whole way around then.
It must be really hard for you guys at the very front end of the race, not knowing exactly where. I mean, if it came down to a shoulder-to-shoulder foot race, who knows how the last few hundred yards would have ended up, right?
Yeah, so, like, Tim was the only person I knew exactly where he was, because he went off first. He was roughly sort of 20, 25 seconds ahead of me. So every lap I was running, I was clocking where he was. And I kind of thought that Tim would be there or thereabouts, definitely the race favourite before the race. So yeah, but as you said, it'd be nice to know exactly where people are, but with COVID and everything, it's just lucky to be racing, aren't we?
And now the rumour is you're going to head out to Kona and try and break the swim course record, is this right?
Yeah, so I come from an elite swimming background, and I raced Ironman Worlds in 2019 and managed to get the quickest swim split there. So yeah, one of my ambitions is to go out to Kona and as an amateur try and break the overall swim course record, which is currently held by the guy who I think owns Sailfish. Yeah, that's the one, yeah. So it's not going to be the only goal. Like, I want to have a good overall race, but it's a bit one of those, like, sort of cherry on top. If I could get that at the beginning of the day, then it'd be a great start.
Small lesson, well done, Staines. Thanks very much for your time.
Cheers, thank you very much.
Okay, so Tim, how did you get on today, mate?
Yeah, I had a great race, thanks. I was second across the line and third overall, so I'm super happy with that. Yeah, it was a great race. Slowly getting used to this staggered start, So yeah, it was really good. I mean, I don't know how long the race took me. I spent 4 hours on my own. I swam on my own. I did the whole bike. I didn't even see a motorbike once. And then I ran on my own. It was nice on the last lap because there were people on their second and first lap. So you get such encouragement from them. And yeah, I really needed that with the wind going away from transition along the lake.
Is it a very different racing sort of feel being out there on your own all day rather than knowing where, like, especially for you top guys who are usually sort of know where each other are on the swim and the bike?
Not really. I mean, you saw when everyone came off the bike, there was a couple of us on our own and then there was a peloton. And that's always going to happen. Leaving 5-6 seconds, there's going to be some form, of pack, unfortunately. But yeah, I rode on my own the whole way, so super chuffed with that. And look, we're racing, if you'd have asked me 2 weeks ago, I'd have said yes, but a week ago maybe not, when they changed the regulations over Christmas, Jan Feb, no chance. So testament to the organization here and everyone that's involved in our sport, from the federation to the outlaw team.
And it's so good to actually see you racing again after your crash a couple of years ago. It must just be, we talked after the crash and you hadn't even really made a comeback yet, so it's so good to see you racing at the highest level again.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm at the highest level again. Highest domestic.
Compared to the rest of us.
Yeah, no, look, I love the sport. It's in my DNA. So, I'm going to race as long as I can. And yeah, so another podium, I'll take that. I really will.
And I just feel great for the guys who are in your age group and you're still racing elite. So that's the awesome bit, buddy.
That's it. I'm 43, next year 44. So, once I hit 45, then I'll go Kona. For the age group.
I think the rule is you can't not race pro until Brownie doesn't race pro anymore.
He's about 10 years younger than me.
All right, thanks very much for your time, mate.
Hey, no worries. Cheers. Thanks.
Great to talk there with Tim. It's great to see him racing again. Great to see him so healthy after his horrendous crash out in Kona. I just love the passion that he brings to it still. And he gave every single thing that he had all the way around the run to try and catch Andy. And again, Andy, what a talent for the future. Only been in the sport for a couple of years. And he said to me afterwards, he's been a big listener of the podcast as he's sort of devoured every episode available and is really passionate about the sport. He's off to Kona to try and chase that swim course record. So I hope to have him on the show in the future and get a full interview with him. Who knows, maybe after that race in Kona. Other races that went on then, we talked about the Lakesman events. The Lakesman Full was won by Danny Bluff. He took it out in 8:53, so very good result to finish there in under 9 hours. Similarly, Matthew Alderson finished in 8:59 and Mitchell Smolin was in 9:13. Over on the female side, I've just clicked the wrong button there on the old internet. We had Rachel Jeff take it out in 10:52 from Lisa Baker in 11 hours flat and Claire Cook in 11:05. In the half Lakesman event, we'll kick off with the results on the male side. A win for Graham Crammond in 4:03. Very, very quick time on that course. And that's underlined by the fact he had about a 12-minute lead there over Ollie McKenna, who finished second, and Alex Cunningham, who was in third. And then over on the female side, Lindsay Duncombe won that in 4:35 from Beth Wilmot from our very own Team Oxygen Addicts in 4:49 and Amelia Hanley in 4:53. So great racing there from everybody. Okay, so that's our race results rounded up. A bit of news, a lot of you might have seen this already. The big news is really that Jan Frodeno and Lionel Sanders are going to go head-to-head in a sort of set-up iron distance race. They're going to try and go really fast in Germany on the 18th of July. It's a sort of looped course that they've set up, and it's been promoted as a kind of mano a mano, one against the other. And it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. It looks very much like they're trying to promote it through social media, very much in the same way that our YouTubers might do with the sort of the Jake Paul fights and things like this. It'll be interesting to see what comes of it, really. I'd be very surprised if Lionel Sanders gets very close to Jan Frodeno, I think Jan will swim away from him, and who knows how the race will actually play out. But I'd imagine if they're both racing full gas, Lionel's not going to make that time up on Jan on the bike or on the run. So it's hard to know how seriously to take an event like this, isn't it? I think it's going to be a good show. And I know it's been promoted by Zwift, and they're talking about, in a sort of bizarre reversal, they're talking about taking the real-time power data from the real world and kind of projecting that into Zwift and having the two avatars on the screen and planning some kind of event where maybe you can join in and try and race alongside the two of them and try and keep up for as long as you can. Again, details are a bit sketchy on the ground at the moment, but watch the space and see how it goes. I'm all in favour of them trying anything. It might be something that certainly raises the spectacle of some racing for us triathlon fans. Whether it will do that outside of the triathlon sphere, I don't know, but good for them for giving it a try. Now, I haven't got a specific coach's couch to talk to you about this week, but, well, not in terms of coaching advice anyway, but one thing that I wanted to touch on was, off the back of our races at the weekend from our team members, we had about 25, 30 people racing across the races at Lakesman, Lakesman Half, and Outlaw Half Nottingham. What we've been surprised at is, I say what we've been surprised at, what's been very interesting is we have, as a coaching team, we've really pushed this year athletes to say, you've done all the training, you've got all the fitness in the bag. The thing you really need to take care of here is a race plan. Be very, very detailed and meticulous about the race plan from everything, but very specifically in terms of performance, power on the bike, pace on the run, knowing what you're capable of doing relative to levels that you've tested at already, putting that race plan together and then measuring yourself afterwards against that race plan and seeing how well you did in terms of riding to your numbers, keeping the power controlled so that you can then run well off the bike. And something that's been really, really noticeable very quickly, and we've still only had probably a quarter of the race reports come in after this weekend, is how many of the people managed to absolutely nail their races, really get down a very detailed bike plan in terms of what power and heart rate they're going to ride to on various sections of the course. It then almost makes it not cheating exactly, but it takes away a lot of the guesswork. Almost every athlete we had knew how fast they were going to ride that bike leg and still be confident of being able to run well off the bike at the weekend. And it's the first mass test of the system, and it's come out really, really well. I've been really, really amazed at just how well it's happened, actually. We thought that it was going to go well, but as with all these things, can never be sure until it actually happens in the real world. So this to say to you, if you're not working with us, you can still go through this same process and know what you're doing if you know what you're trying to work out and look for. So we've said this before, our race planning document is freely available to people. If you're willing to do a little bit of effort in the run-up to this, and you should be because you've been willing to do all the training, don't leave that last 5% in terms of the planning undone and not know what you're doing going into your race day. Because so many comments have come in about people saying, you know, it took away all the doubts I had going into this race. I knew exactly what I needed to do. I was really confident that if I did this on the bike and rode to these power levels, I would be confident to be able to go out and smash the run at the times and paces that I knew I was capable of. And so it's been proven. So yeah, we're really happy. I'm really stoked for so many members to race so well. If you guys are interested in signing up for coaching and you want a bit of extra help, we've reopened entries to Team Oxygen Addicts at the moment. What we've got on at the moment is an offer where we're going to extend an annual membership. If you join anytime between now and up to the end of September, we'll extend your membership to the end of September next year. So at the moment, with us being mid-June, you're going to get the end of June, July, August and September of this year effectively free. It's like 3.5 free months at this moment. So that's going to be a nice little sweetener. You get to race with us all through this season. Obviously, we're not going to have a huge impact if you're racing in 2 weeks' time, but if you're not racing until September, there's still plenty of time for us to get you in great shape. And then you've got all of the winter to really up your power levels on the bike and your skill levels on the swim and your durability on the run. then we can get you into perfect shape for next summer. So again, if you want to join us there, we'll put a link in the show notes. You can even have a call with us beforehand if you want to chat through how that works. So yeah, come on board. A few shout outs from performances this weekend. First up, I've already mentioned Beth Wilmot finishing second at the Lakesman Half. That's a fantastic performance. Nick Pocock, who you might remember hearing on the show on one of our age group specials before Christmas, he entered a sprint distance race at Lake Minnetonka over in America, and off no specific sprint preparation, placed third in his age group, which is fantastic. And just last one, I want to give a shout out to our member in France, Steve Camilleri. He raced Torsen Man 70.3 distance in France this weekend. His previous PB was 6 hours 20 from September of last year. He went 5:35 on this race, so it's like a 45-minute PB in 9 months. And Steve's a great example of someone who has really applied himself. He had an absolutely bulletproof race planning and race preparation document. Everything went to plan, mainly because he'd planned it in such good detail. So really, really impressed there, Steve. Cracking stuff, and keep up the good work. There's even more to come. Okay, so that wraps up the section of the show. Now we're going to head over onto our interview of the week. This is with Andy Blow from Precision Hydration with our fueling special. So if you're after strategies for fueling your triathlon or any endurance event, really, this is the special segment for you. Hope you enjoy it. Here's Andy Blow from Precision Hydration. Blow from Precision Hydration, welcome onto the show. It's great to have you back on, mate. I've been talking about your products, obviously, ad infinitum on the show, and I've been trailing your latest announcement for the last few weeks. So the big news is PH are now doing energy gels, PH are now doing energy drinks, as well as your electrolyte tablets and electrolyte salts. So let's kick off with that. How have you ended up making the decision to go into doing energy products?
Well, it's been a while coming, Rob. We've been talking about it for a long time, and I know that you've got an opinion on COVID because you've been someone who's really suffered some of the bad consequences of it. This is for us is like one of the good things that's come out of COVID, because last year we stopped traveling, we sat down, and we really had a good think about and looking forward and saying, okay, well, what do we feel is the next step for us as a business? And we've always talked about the fact that every conversation we have with athletes around hydration tends to, in some way, shape or form, cross over into fueling as well, because clearly, you know, calories, carbohydrates, fluids and electrolytes, they're the big things that matter when you're doing an endurance event. So we've always had an opinion on that. We've always talked to athletes about it, but we've done that in our one-to-one conversations rather than outwardly as a brand, because we've been very focused on the hydration element. And I think the catalyst really was that during lockdown, we started doing one-to-one video calls with athletes, and we've done hundreds and hundreds of them now. And every single conversation has involved a chat about fueling. So in the end, we were just like, right, we've just got to get on with this and put our money where our mouth is, build the tools, because we wanted to build online tools to help people in the same way to help them understand electrolyte and fluid needs. We want to build tools to help them understand carbohydrate needs. And then we want a range of products, which, like with the electrolyte products, is very simple, very obvious in terms of like the directions for use and the amount of carbohydrate that's in them. So we're effectively produced the toolkit for people to get their fueling and hydration right.
Nice. And it's really good, actually. I've had a bit of early access to this and I've been on and had to play around with it. And I think you've done a really great job. I've got to take my hat off to you, because it's always been a missing element of the conversation. I think everyone knows that there's hundreds of different brands out there, and different brands have got either different carbohydrate content, or in some cases, they've got a different mix of different kinds of carbohydrate, or there's some new brand that comes out that says, we've got a special way of getting more carbohydrate into you per hour. And it gets very confusing for people. And the way we've always approached it within Team Oxygen Addict is to say to people, whatever you're going to do, you need to start it with a plan. We give our athletes a race planning document and say, every single thing you can control on race day, we're going to have a plan for. And anything you can't control, you don't need a plan for anyway. But it's often the first time people have been, you know, we make them print it out on paper and do it with a pen, write on this with a pen. And people are really resistant to doing it, because I think it's a bit like when you're at school, isn't it? And you have to do an exam. They go, well, check through your exam afterwards. No one ever wants to do that. Mm-hmm. If you're forced to write it down and have a plan, you've then got something to hold yourself accountable for. And there's no real excuses for not having that done. So you've always had this great set of planning tools for people to help work out what sort of level of electrolytes they need, which has worked really well. You've now got the similar sort of thing on there for carbohydrate needs as well. Do you want to talk through a little bit about what that tool looks like and how people go about using it?
Yeah, for sure. The first tool that we've built is called the Quick Carb Calculator. And it's when people visit precisionhydration.com, they'll find it on the page with the energy gels and the energy drink mix at the moment. So it's tucked away on there, and it says how much fuel do I need. And you click it, and it'll ask you a few questions about the type of sport you're doing, the duration of the session or race, and the intensity. And they're on like the little sliders. Anyone who's familiar with using Strava for the easy, moderate, hard, very hard sort of slider, it's that type of interface. So it's quite easy to use. And we've then built an algorithm with Abby, our sports scientist, looking at a combination of the hard evidence and science that's out there, which says how much carbohydrate is required to fuel different lengths and intensities of activity. Plus, we've obviously put our own experience into it as well to give you kind of guidelines. So the guidelines tend to work as the recommendations can be anything from as little as obviously zero. Like if you put in that you're doing a 30-minute session, especially at a low intensity, it's going to say you don't need any carbs for that session. But you start to go up to an hour, 90 minutes and beyond, and you start to see 30 grams an hour of carbohydrate recommended. At a high intensity or a longer duration, you might see 60 grams or 30 to 60 grams. And then beyond that, we might even recommend for some really longer durations or very high intensities, up to 90 grams plus per hour of carbohydrate. And the idea is, though, that it gives you that ballpark in which to start your trial and error. So that's the starting tool. It's like all of our online tools, it's free to use. It's very, very quick. You can literally get an answer in 20 seconds. And we've had loads of people using it already, you know, just running different scenarios through it to see what the recommendations are like. And eventually what we're building in the background, which is a monster project, but which is happening as I speak, is a kind of far more sophisticated full race fuel and hydration planner. So at the moment you can come to the website and do a hydration plan, you can do the quick carb calculator of your fuel, but eventually we will have a combined sort of Ironman, marathon running, long cycling, time trial, whatever it is, you'll be able to do a bespoke plan for everything all in one.
Yeah, that's awesome. And it works really well. I've been on there and had a play with it, and it's kicked out the kind of numbers that we recommend to our athletes. And so we're mostly focused on triathletes racing either half iron and full iron distance. One of the big challenges, especially with first timers over the iron distances, they'll get back from a ride and they'll have worked out, Strava will tell them they've burned somewhere between 600 and 800 calories an hour. And then the first thought is, well, I'm burning 600 to 800 calories an hour. Surely I've got to replace that 600 to 800 calories an hour, which would be in the realm of, I don't know, a couple of hundred grams of carbohydrate, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
And it's hard to get people it's hard to get people to accept, firstly, you don't need that amount of carbohydrate. Secondly, if you did have that amount, it's not going to digest. That's the key thing, isn't it? It's about what you can digest at race intensity, whatever that is.
Yeah.
And any more than that is just going to sit there in your stomach and need to come out one of two ways on the run. That's my line to people.
Yeah.
It's coming out the top or the bottom when you get onto the run course.
Yeah. Yeah, very, very much so. It's about appreciating that like with fluid, like with electrolytes, there's kind of a window that you need to hit. There's very much so a lower limit below which you will start to suffer, because the predominant fuel that you're going to burn when you're doing a long distance event is, even though a lot of people are quite, there's a lot of chat these days about fat burning, and you know, fat obviously contributes to the energy that's burnt during exercise. But when the exercise is relatively high intensity, like most of the fit people that you're working with doing an Ironman or half Ironman is, the majority of the fuel supplied is in the form of carbohydrate. And in the body, that's stored in the muscles and in the liver as glycogen. And you've probably got enough glycogen, if you're well stocked, to keep you going for a couple of hours. And beyond that, you need this technical term is exogenous carbohydrate, which basically just means carbohydrate that you eat or drink, to come in to spare some of that muscle glycogen, so that it's like refueling your car on the go, essentially, rather than waiting until the tanks are empty, because at that point you're going to have ground to a halt. So there's this window, and there's a lot of research. There's loads of research been done over the last 30 plus years into carbohydrate fueling, because it is like a real key to success for endurance athletes. But as you pointed out earlier, the waters have been quite muddied, and it's got quite confused because in the field of sports nutrition, when people bring out a new product, what they tend to do is they tend to major on extolling the virtues of a certain product feature, because that's how marketing works. It's like, this is like the old gel we used to have, but better, because it's a hydrogel, or because it's got added caffeine, or it's got something else, you know. And there's like a product feature story that tells people, in really it's trying to set the psychology up for them to believe that, you know. And it's usually done in tandem with elite athlete endorsements. So it's like, this is a new hydrogel, or this is a new gel, and it's used by the dude that's just won Hawaii Ironman. So therefore, in everyone's mind, it's like, well, this is obviously the shit that we need to win, you know. And you know, there's nothing inherently sort of like wrong with that. It's marketing. We all know it goes on. But I think what it does is it masks the real question, the one that we've been trying to answer for athletes and answer with athletes, is like, it doesn't matter particularly, or it doesn't matter as much what type or what feature of carbohydrate you've got. Because when carbohydrates go in the body, they basically get broken down to glucose and fructose, you know, and absorbed. And so the fundamental question really is like, how much carbohydrate do I need to take per hour? And that's defined by trial and error. But as you've pointed out, there's kind of, you want to know roughly what band you're in. So the whole quick carb calculator thing and all this is to get you in the right band. We know that a low amount of carbs for an endurance athlete, any endurance athlete, to take per hour is probably in the sort of 30 to 40 grams per hour range. That tends to be absolutely fine and works for shorter events, you know, up 2 hours or whatever. The longer the event goes, though, the more you've got the chance to rinse through your glycogen stores, the more carbohydrate you want to take on. And for a long, long time, it was thought that sort of 60 grams an hour was about the tolerable limit for most people. And that was partly because the gut, the transporters in the gut that absorb glucose, can sort of process about that much, about 1 gram per, you know, 1 gram per minute, so 60 grams an hour. Then in the early 2000s, Asker Jukendrup and other researchers who are working with elite athletes were looking at the habits of elite athletes and saying, well, actually what we're seeing in reality is there's quite a few elite athletes that are taking more than 60 grams an hour when they're going hard. And sort of then set to reverse engineer the question of, well, if 60 grams an hour isn't a hard ceiling, like why not? And they introduced this concept of 2-to-1 glucose to fructose ratio in nutrition products, because fructose is absorbed in the gut by different transporters than glucose. It allegedly seems to top out at around 30 grams an hour. So you put 60 grams of glucose an hour and 30 grams of fructose an hour, and then all of a sudden you've got 90 grams of carbohydrate going into the system, which can then spare more muscle glycogen and be burnt more efficiently to keep output high. So in the early 2000s, we moved into this phase of like, okay, 90 grams an hour is a high-end target for athletes who are moving very fast for very long durations, if they feel like they can tolerate it. And then even more recently, there's been a move to say, well, actually, when we really look at what some elite athletes are doing, they're doing even more than that. They're doing 120 grams of carbohydrate an hour. And although that's probably still not common, you know, or not really common in terms of across the board with athletes, what we've learned in the last couple of years working with guys who are doing the Tour de France, elite triathletes who are really winning big world-class races, is that one of the factors that defines the difference with them is the ability to absorb a lot more carbs. And so yeah, I think that's also part of where, when you talk about your athletes having these high goals of what carbohydrates to take in, it's a bit, the message is starting to creep out that like more carbohydrate is better, which to an extent it is if you can process it. But you would almost also argue that obviously like more training is better if you can tolerate it and recover from it. Because the best athletes in the world
train a lot. If you can tolerate it, but
exactly.
That's exactly it.
So we're sort of now, the messaging that we're trying to get across to people is as ever, is trying to be relatively nuanced about the fact that, look, if you want to perform really, really well at long distances, taking in a good amount of carbohydrate is going to be helpful. As long as you can process it, because otherwise you end up with a massive watermelon bloated stomach and either sickness or diarrhea or whatever. So that's why the quick carb calculator is a good starting point for people, because I think it sort of gets them in a zone of like, well, this is what the recommendations say. And then, as I know you do with your athletes, it's about, okay, go and trial that in simulation training sessions, in minor races, take notes, see how much carb you're taking in and how you feel, and then you can iterate from there. And that's one of the reasons actually why the carbohydrate products that we've brought out, we've tried to be very clear and simple on the labeling. So our carbohydrate gel has 30 grams of carbohydrate in it exactly, and it says 30 grams in massive letters on the front, because we do this for a living. We go through athletes' race reports of what they ate and drank. And sometimes it will take poor old Abby on the team like 2 hours to work out how much carbohydrate and how much fluid and sodium someone had in an Ironman, because such and such gel has 22.3 grams and another gel has 17 grams, another one has 28 grams.
Exactly.
And yeah, it's just like, know your numbers, test your numbers. And then, you know, iterate from there is our basic message. So what we've tried to do is build this like toolkit, digital tools, physical products that then allow you to go through that process.
Yeah, that's awesome. I think one of the big challenges with this has always been, like you said, that there's these stories that came out of probably the late 80s, early 90s, Mark and Dave able to tolerate 500 calories an hour.
Yeah.
And as you say, the things that make these guys really good at the sport, the things that make them an outlier, there's every reason to believe they're an outlier, not just in their ability to run 6 minute miles off the bike in an Ironman in Hawaii in the heat, but also that they can absorb more calories than the average human. A bit like, you know, when we try and reverse engineer from Eliud Kipchoge's marathon record, again, maybe there's an element that they can absorb more fuel. It's always struck me as interesting that if you look at ex-champion Tour de France cyclists, they often balloon in weight after they finish their careers. And it's made me wonder, obviously part of it is they've been used to training huge volumes and then they're not anymore. But I wonder whether there's an element of, you know, look at Bernardino and you look at Stephen Roach and you look at Miguel Indurain, maybe their bodies are just exceptional at absorbing the calories that they put in, and it's allowed them to fuel more effectively than other people, and that's why they have this change when they stop racing and training.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I've never heard that one sort of speculated or researched before, but you know, we do know that these guys are really, really good at, like you say, they're really good at absorbing calories. And one interesting feature that I think people are gaining an awareness for as well is that whilst probably not everyone can aspire to eat or absorb as many grams of carbohydrate or calories as the really top elite guys, there is quite a lot of evidence starting to emerge to suggest that wherever you're at the moment, like any factor in physiology, you can train it to get better. And that's definitely an area where I know from my own experience, you know, racing back in the sort of 90s, early 2000s, and I don't think I was unique in this, but my mentality a lot of the time was to train relatively light on food and fuel, because A, when you're struggling along trying to pay the bills as a not very good professional athlete, you don't want to be eating 5 energy gels on every ride. but more so than that, it was a bit like, well, if I eat a bit less, I might stay lighter and leaner. And also I will feel the boost of this stuff on race day when I do fuel up properly, whereas actually that's been proven to be a bit of a silly concept, because A, if you don't fuel adequately to perform the work required in training, your training quality and recovery drops, and then also on race day, your gut isn't used to handling that, the amount of carbohydrate that you throw at it. So you're far more likely to experience the sickness and diarrhea and those sort of things. So my attitude personally has shifted dramatically to saying, actually, if I go out and I went out and did for what was for me these days, a pretty hard session at the weekend on my gravel bike with two riders who were basically a lot better than me. And I just, one of the ways in which I was able to hold the wheel and not end up riding home on my own was basically smashing 60 grams of carbohydrate an hour for 3 hours. Because in the old days, I would not have considered banging a gel in the first 40 minutes of a 3 hour training ride, but I knew what I was in for on Sunday. And actually, you know, I wish I'd had that knowledge, like with the stuff about electrolytes. I wish I'd had that knowledge 15 years ago, because I'm sure I'd have put it to good use in races. I remember having a conversation one year with, you remember Stephen Bayliss, who did really well in Ironman for a number of years. And Stephen and I ended up racing each other quite a few times when we were sort of age group athletes. And then as Steve did a really strong pivot into pro racing and went from being someone who I would measure myself closely against to someone who would basically kick my ass in an Ironman. And I remember chatting to him after Ironman UK one year about how much he ate and drank on the bike. And he would feel relatively lightly, I would say. And that had a profound and sort of like skewing effect on me, because I was thinking, oh, well, maybe I'm eating too much. And actually, I think I was underfueling, and I think he was really underfueling. Now, he seemed to be able to perform on that. So there's always exceptions to the rule. But little things like that, little bits of sort of like what turned out for me to be like misguided knowledge had a strong effect. So again, that's another part of the whole reason for us not just building a car product and chucking it out into the market. It's like building educational tools, is to say to people, look, this is genuinely what the evidence suggests is the right amount of carbs. Yeah. And therefore, you know, let's experiment around those numbers rather than doing what your mates told you to do or having a stab in the dark.
Or following the advice of some random guy in the Ironman Journey Facebook group who says, I've just been out and done a 2 hour fasted run before breakfast. I think the key thing with this is we've got to remember, especially for half iron and iron distance racing, like you've said, you absolutely hit the nail on the head, Andy. It's training your body to absorb the calories it's going to need, because it's going to need to absorb calories. And if most of the runs and rides you've done in training have been done on either minimal calories or minimal water or minimal electrolytes, and then suddenly on race day, it's getting 60 to 80 grams of carbs put in it an hour and all this water and all this sodium, it's no surprise that the body struggles to absorb it. So I am I'm a big advocate that getting the fueling right is probably as important, if not as important as, or not more important than actually getting the training right. Because essentially the Ironman especially is a fuel limited event. It isn't a fitness limited event. It's the fact that, you know, you'll see loads of sort of ex-ITU hotshots in an Ironman walking at mile 6 of the marathon and quitting at mile 8. And it's not because they don't have the fitness to do it. It's because they haven't got the fueling right yet.
Yeah, and what you were saying there about the hydration aspect, obviously we've talked endlessly about hydration in the past, but there's an interesting interplay between fueling and hydration, because if you allow yourself to become a little bit too dehydrated in a long event, you've reduced your blood volume, and it's your blood that transports that absorbs the calories from your gut into the bloodstream to dissipate them around the body. So if you get dehydrated, it will result in a loss of blood flow to the gut, which is already compromised when you start exercising, which is already even further compromised when you're exercising the heat, because so much blood flow is going to the skin. So what you can find is that if you don't get your hydration right, even if you're taking the calories in, you can't absorb them because they are just going to sit there. And then the other point, to your point about fitness and other things, the other factor that we've talked a lot about in terms of being highly correlated with success in hydration and nutrition terms or fueling terms is pacing. Because if you go too hard, because we all know that going hard on the bike in an Ironman is really easy, incredibly common, and yet often catastrophic, you know, more often than not, it's catastrophic. And one of the reasons for that is that when we talk to athletes now about fueling an Ironman, we talk about this concept of front loading. So in other words, getting ahead of your calories and fluids a little bit in the early stages of the bike and getting ahead of your calories for the marathon overall on the bike, because we know you can't eat and drink as much when you're running as when you're cycling. Yep. And if you go really hard in the first 30 miles of the bike because you're feeling fantastic and the adrenaline's pumping, you'll eat and drink less, you'll burn more energy, you'll sweat more, and you've set up the perfect storm of what you've described, which is like by mile six of the marathon, looking for a shovel to dig your own little hole by the side of the road to get into.
I remember years ago reading a quote, it was probably Gordo quoting, what was that really good Kiwi Ironman, one of the big four? My name's gone blank, Andy.
Scott Molina.
Scott Molina. His quote to athletes he trained was, in an Ironman, if you feel good on the bike, slow down and eat. And if you feel bad or you feel angry on the bike, slow down and eat. And I think his point was that mood shifts are usually down to blood sugar getting low. So if you start to think, I'll sell this bike for 50 quid to the first bidder, it's a sign that you need more calories. But more importantly, it was like, if you feel good, it's not the time to lay the hammer down and really push on. It's time to ease up on that power and use the opportunity to get the calories in.
Yeah, definitely. I remember reading a variation on the same quote where it was essentially him saying, when your attitude towards the race takes a significant shift, it's time to look at your nutrition. Yeah.
Yeah.
We talk to athletes a lot, which is it is a difficult thing to do at first, but about this kind of like keeping a mental ledger of everything you've eaten and drunk in the last hour or two, because when you do this like top to toe, how am I feeling check every so often, if you can then run that in the database in your head against how much you've eaten and drunk in the last hour, comparing that to what your plan sort of suggested you might do, it's a very easy way to start to say, okay, well, if my plan called for 75 grams of carbs an hour and I've only had 45, then going looking at more calories is potentially a really useful thing to be doing. However, if I'm already doing 90 grams, then upping that is unlikely to be where the solution lies. Maybe I've got to slow down, or maybe I need to drink a bit more or something like that.
Yeah.
And so knowing that we've talked about it before, but this like there's three levers that you can pull during a race for hydration and fueling. It's the amount of fluid, the amount of sodium, the amount of carbs. And you've got to pull those at the right time to the right degree for you. You can pre-plan to an extent what the parameters for those numbers are going to be. And I would actually argue that for the carbohydrate side of things, once you've dialed that in, it's relatively stable for most people. It might shift a little bit in the heat or the cold, but it's not going to go all over the map. Fluids and electrolytes do, because obviously on a freezing cold day, your requirement is going to be vastly less than what it is on a stinking hot and humid day. But as long as you've got an appreciation for what zone those numbers should be in, plus you're listening to the biofeedback from your body all the time, that's when you're able to tinker with your plan on the move successfully. I remember talking to, I interviewed Craig Alexander once for 220 magazine when he was in his sort of prime of winning Hawaii, and talked to him about electrolyte replacement. And he had an amount of electrolyte capsules, like salt capsules, that he wanted to take on the bike, but he would up and down that amount by how the feeling in his legs was. He reckoned he could feel when he got twitchy or tight muscles that he needed a few more salt tablets. And if he was like feeling a bit thirsty and a bit oversalted, he would back off on them. And he said to me that sometimes he would take as little as maybe 6 or 8 on the bike, and sometimes it would be 15 or 18. But it would be like slightly pre-planned. So he had enough, the maximum he thought he might use, but then he would adjust it on the day because of the unknown variables.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really interesting, isn't it? Yeah, it's good stuff. Okay, so for our guys, the general generic advice I give our athletes to start from for 70.3 or Ironman is we're going to go with about 250 calories an hour. So that would be 60 grams an hour. plus or minus. So maybe a little bit more for our bigger, stronger athletes, a little bit less for our smaller, often female athletes. So we're often in a band, I think, probably between 200 to 300 calories, which would be, that'd be 50 to 80 grams of carbs an hour, something like that. Talk us through the products that you've come out with then. I think that's the next way to go. Because like you said, I really like the way you branded it. It ties in really nicely with the fact it's got 30 grams in big white letters.
Yeah.
I'm surprised, and credit to you for this, because it's one of those ideas that looks obvious in hindsight, but no one's done it before. You had it with your electrolytes. It's got 500, 1,000, 1,500 milligrams on the packets. You've gone with the 30 grams on the packets there. What products have you got available for athletes for their fueling needs now then?
Yeah, the first one is not an electrolyte, it's a carbohydrate gel. Very used to saying electrolytes over this. No, it's a gel which has got 30 grams of carbohydrates in it, exactly as you said. It says so on the packet. The idea is that it does have a 2-to-1 glucose fructose ratio in it, which, you know, the science suggests helps the absorption if you are aiming to take larger amounts. But other than that, it's very plain and simple. It's got no flavor. It tastes sweet, a little bit sweet because it is a carbohydrate, but we have purposely not flavored it. Like with our drinks, we put the very mildest flavor in because taste fatigue is a big thing. And whilst it's quite funny, and over the years I have had like rhubarb and custard gels and, you know, all the other crazy stuff that you get out there,
that's exactly often what I had in my head, man. I was picturing the rhubarb and custard gel I got given in Ironman UK one year, and I was looking at this going, I know I need it, but really,
yeah, do I really want that? Yeah,
rhubarb, like, and custard.
So, well, you probably need to bleep this bit in a minute, but Alan Murchison, who's the performance chef, who is a friend of ours. Yeah, Alan, we sent him some gels to try, and he just sent me an email back saying, yeah, I'm glad you've not gone for any of them wanky flavours. He said, you just need it to perform. And the idea was, you know, you're not going to compare this with something you'd eat at a picnic, for example. You know, it's like, I think it tastes really good for what it does. I'm not going to pretend that there's like, I'm not going to have it instead of a dinner. You know, that's not the point. It's a simple performance product. So we've got the 30 gram gel. We're actually working on a 90 gram, codenamed the Jumbo Gel, which is going to be a bigger serving in one, because we think that why would you want to like carry three packets around on the run when you could carry one, you know? So that's in development at the moment. So should be coming out towards the back end of 2021. Same product inside, but just a different packaging format. We've got a drink mix which contains 30 grams of carbohydrate per 500 mil. And that is also a 2-to-1 glucose fructose ratio, very mild flavor. It's got 500 milligrams of sodium per serving as well. So it's the kind of equivalent strength of our pH 1000 product for sodium. And the idea with that product is actually people will use that in longer distance races as part of their fueling strategy, but our idea with that product is that it's predominantly for the kind of Olympic distance guys, for the 2-hour efforts, for the Xterra, for the marathon runner, where splitting, you don't gain a lot of advantage through splitting your carbohydrates, your fluids and electrolytes like you do in a long race. So it's actually more convenient to have it all in one bottle, because the tolerance on the numbers that you need to hit is a bit wider. So I think we will definitely see, and I've used it on some long bike rides and testing and that kind of thing, and I can see people using it as a component to their fueling strategy. But we have designed it for like the sort of shorter, faster events where you want carbs, fluids, electrolytes all in one bottle. And then following on from that, the one I'm most excited about, because I love them, using them in training, is we've got chews coming, like little energy chews, which are sort of a very different, I'm not going to give too much away, but they're like a different texture and formulation to anything you've probably had before. And we're a few weeks away from actually releasing those, but we've been testing them hard, and everyone who's had them is just, and they're going to be 30 gram blocks. So you'll have a 30 gram block of carbohydrate basically that you can kind of nibble down on, and it's halfway between a gel and an energy bar. Very simple, very plain, And I think they're going to be great for, especially when you get a bit sick of the sort of just the monotony of like a gel after a gel after a gel. I've been using them on a long bike ride in combination, just so you've got something to chew on, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's the range. And like I say, we've tried to design everything about them to be full of useful features. So that exactly 30 grams of carb, 2-to-1 glucose fructose for the simpler products so that they add up. But beyond that, we've not tried to do the whole like crazy new features thing. It's about then using them in combination with the tools, using them in combination with our electrolyte products to get those numbers right. That's how people will get a magic result, rather than pretending that, oh, okay, well, we've invented some crazy new technology here. It's glucose, you know, at the end of the day.
Well, that's the thing I really like about it, is the simplicity of it. And I've got a feeling that certainly from the athletes we work with, there's sometimes a bit of information overload with athletes. They've got all these different products and they're looking at this chew from this one, and like you said, this gel, and working out how many calories are in it. I think simplifying it down to something that people can just go, right, I need two of these in a bottle, and I'm good to go. And I'm one of these or two of these an hour. It'll really make things much simpler for people. And that's a big part of it for athletes on race day, when they've got 57 other things to be worrying about. Keeping the fueling, the hydration and the electrolytes dead simple, I think is a real clever selling feature almost. It's not a selling feature, it's just really clever.
And then I think the beauty of it is, if you use those products in a race, it's very simple to, and you should do this, is jot down afterwards how many you used. You can then, drinks, carbohydrate gels, chews, whatever it is, look at those numbers, sort of try and work out how many grams of carb did I have an hour on the bike, how many milliliters of fluid, how many milligrams of sodium. Do the same for the run. Look at that, compare it with your performance, compare it with the temperature, and compare it with how your GI tract handled it. Did you feel okay? Did you have any upset or anything like that? And from there, you can iterate your approach. And that's exactly what we do with the athletes that we work closely with, is we take them through that process. So they fill out a form before a race with their intended race fueling plan. They fill out a form the day of or the day after the race with what they actually did. We compare the two, and we compare the two also with what we would consider to be textbook optimal. And then we put that in the database, you know, and we then decide, okay, well, does that sound like it worked? Do we think we could do a little bit more with the carbs? Should we do less, more with the fluid, less, more with the sodium, or less? And then we've got then the plan for the next race writes itself. And you go on from there. And so we'll be producing tools over time to help people through that process. But in the meantime, if anyone who's listening thinks they want to go through that process, you know, we've got free one-to-one video calls they can book with the team. We'd be more than happy for someone to, you know, record what they're either talk to us about their race plan, or if it's post-race, have a debrief with us on what they took. All they need to bring along to that call is a very simple spreadsheet of like carbs, fluids, sodium that they took, and we should be able to give them a pointer in the right direction.
Awesome. That's really good. And I know a lot of the guys we work with really benefited from those calls, Andy, when they were going through stuff during lockdown and getting to talk to a real expert on it about their electrolyte needs or the calorie needs, really helped set their mind at rest. I think the key thing that you came back to there again is there's not like a right answer for everybody. It's something that every athlete has got to go away and firstly trial in training, and then trial in the race simulation rides. And then hopefully they get it right on race day, but maybe they don't the first time. It's something that they've got to work through. We're on a similar page in that idea of keeping records of what people do, because without that, we're just kind of guessing at what's happened, and we don't really learn anything for the future about how to get better on it.
No. And I mean, I look back when I was racing seriously and think one area where I got things quite right was in my bike prep for big races. I was one of those people that would go and ride where I could go and ride the course with the race bike exactly set up as I would use it in the race, you know, literally the same everything. I'd use my race wheels. A lot of people you see, they save this stuff for the day because it's expensive, because it looks cool. They don't want to get it dirty. They don't want to have to clean it, all of that. I was never bothered by that. Anyone who raced near me would have noticed that my bikes were never the cleanest or that sort of thing. But that was because I'd been out round the courses, testing the gear ratios, like really, really getting comfortable riding that bike on that course for the duration. And I think if you the analogy there is very straightforward. It's like, do the same for your nutrition. Like, don't save your nutrition for race day. I mean, I'm not an advocate for saying to people you should use pre-packaged sports nutrition for every single session you do in a training week. That is not the message. The message is in those, like, once, maybe twice a week, as you're in the close build up to the race, you want to be like absolutely carbon copy everything that you can. You want to be swimming in that new wetsuit that you've got, which you're going to use in the race. You know, you're going to be running, you're going to be putting at least some miles on the new Vaporflies or whatever it is that you're going to run in, and you're going to be smashing the gels and the drinks and the electrolytes that you're going to use on race day at race intensity, because then there's no surprises.
Yeah. And another tip I've got as well that's just sprung into my head was, I remember it's really important to practice having your race nutrition at race temperature, because it's one thing to sort of the night before your big training ride, make your bottles up and put them in the fridge so they're nice and cold. Guess what? Come race day, you're going to be drinking warm bottles because you're out in the sun for 4 or 5 hours. And the thing that tasted nice when it was cold out of the fridge now tastes unstomachable and unpalatable. So the more like that race day experience it can be, it's much better to find out you can't take this stuff in training than it is to find out on race day that it isn't going to work.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, simulation is the key word, isn't it? It's like simulate without getting ridiculous about it, simulate all of the key features that matter. And then you'll do a bit of your learning before you get to the day, which is always preferable.
Good. So looking at the website, as we're recording, this stuff's for pre-order at the moment. But by the time this goes live, I think some of it will be available for people to purchase. So the gels going on sale first before the energy drink. Is that right?
Yeah, we just literally, as we record, we are starting to put the pre-orders out in the mail in the next few days. And we're receiving batches of product to go out all the time. The interesting thing is, we may, based on the numbers that have come in with the pre-order sale, we might have underestimated how much we needed to order. So there will be a little bit of element, I think, of stock availability being variable on the new energy products for a few weeks while we get used to that. Basically, we were quite ambitious with what we thought people would want, and they appear to want more than we thought they did.
It's a nice problem to have. Still a problem, but it's a nice problem. Yeah.
So what I would say, if people are mega keen, get the pre-orders in. We'll always put on the website the date which we expect those to ship. So, and we've got pretty accurate eyes on when products are being made and coming in and all that sort of stuff. So if they're not immediately available, you'll be able to get them on pre-order. And in the meantime, if anyone's got questions about the product, there's pretty comprehensive product information pages on the website. But as most of your listeners will well know, we love hearing from people anyway. They can email us hello@precisionhydration.com. We've got live chat on the website now, inbox video calls. So don't be shy, get in touch, basically.
Nice one. Well, I'll put links in the show notes to some of the things we've talked about. I can put links into the quick carb calculator and the three levers for fueling endurance performance blogs. And I think the key part of this is, I think there's tons of information you've put out there for people to go away and read. And that's the first place to start. It's looking at what the information is, working out what they need, and then starting to do the trial and error based on the science.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's that thing, like, if you do a little bit of prep, then get stuck into the trial and error. And then at that point, it's the best time to reach out to us, because you've got a bit of experience under your belt, and we'll be able to hopefully guide you for the fine tuning.
Nice one. Awesome. Andy, thanks very much for taking the time to join us, mate. It's been great to catch up. You got any races coming up yourself? You got anything going on endurance wise this coming summer? Who knows whether events are going to be going on or not?
Yeah, good question. I mean, I've always got my eye on trying to squeeze a swim run in these days if I can. Whether I'll get one in this year or not is unclear. I've got my eyes on the Isles of Scilly swim run again next year. So that's 12 months away. So I've got back in the pool. My triceps are hanging off from a session this morning using the swim paddles for first time in a while. But other than that, no, I'm ticking over, mate. I've got a gravel bike now. I'm loving riding that when I can, if the sun's shining. Just keeping fit.
Good stuff, mate. All right, well, listen, you take care of yourself, man, and we'll talk to you again soon. And I'll stick all those links in the show notes so people can go and read up about what we've been talking about.
Thanks, Rob. Lovely to chat as ever.
You too, mate. Okay, that brings us to the end of this week's show. Hope you really enjoyed that special on hydration and fueling needs. I hope it's really helped you out. And remember, there's links in the show notes today to all of those sections that Andy's talked about. There's links there to book a call with them and talk through your own hydration and calorie strategy. And if you go on their website, the new range of gels and energy drinks is available now as well. Okay, that brings us to the end of this week's show. Thanks very much to our sponsors, Precision Hydration. And remember, you can use the code OXYGENETIC15 for 15% off your first electrolyte and energy needs order. Also, if you're interested in triathlon coaching, teamoxygenetic.com. We believe it's the most comprehensive triathlon coaching program out there for busy age groupers. There's links in the show notes for both sponsors, so you don't have to remember them. And until next week, have a great, safe training and racing week. I'm Coach Rob Wilby, and you've been listening to the Oxygen Addict Triathlon Podcast. See ya.